Yeah, we've had the great pleasure each week to chat with TJ O'Hara from the United States, author, speaker, strategic consultant, one-time candidate for the presidency of the United States. That was in 2012 when he ran as an independent. He joins us from San Diego now. TJ, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Greg.
A few things to talk about in our final chat for now. President Biden having top secret documents in his possession. It's a little bit weird after all the fuss about Donald Trump having possession of some down at Mar-a-Lago, right?
Well, turnabout's fair play. Of course, he was very comfortable denigrating former President Trump for his lack of responsibility, but now he gets to enjoy that same pleasure himself. And I will give shout-out to Attorney General Garland, who should be commended. He's being assailed by some people, but he should be commended for appointing a special counsel to investigate both infractions. So he's treating them identically.
Yeah. Is there anything to it? What could be the end result of all of this? Is it much or not much?
The optics are bad for everyone, although the media will portray it different ways. Social media came out and said Trump was a criminal, he committed treason, he should be imprisoned, he should be executed. Joe Biden's not going to receive that same treatment. He's come out with a different position, totally cooperative and so forth. But beyond that, the factual distinctions are actually in former President Trump's favor. He was at least a former president, and he had some prior capability to declassify information. When Joe Biden was vice president at the time, he had no authority to declassify. So both individuals were careless when you come right down to it. They didn't treat the documents properly. Classified documents are to be examined by authorized individuals within a SCIF, which is an acronym for Sensitive Compartmented Information Facility. And a person who is classified files at his or her home does not, as they like to quote themselves, take classified documents and classified material seriously. If they did, that wouldn't have happened.
Exactly.
So it's an embarrassment for both.
Okay. Now, just on documents, I've always been fascinated, and I have a hunch you probably have been too, in the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and I've read dozens and dozens of books on it and interviewed many people about it. And I was having a look over the last week at some of the latest documents released about it. This is at the same time as I've just finished reading a book called Mary's Mosaic by Peter Janney on the assassination of President Kennedy. He makes the case, and he was in the CIA, he believes his father, who was also in the CIA, played a part in the assassination of JFK. That is, that the CIA did. What's your take on the whole thing?
I wish I had a firm understanding, but unfortunately, President Kennedy was shot in 1963. There was a 1922 law, as I recall, that required the government to release all the documents related to the assassination by October of 2017. That obviously didn't happen. And it's now 2023, and there's still documents being withheld, ostensibly to protect sources and practices and so forth. So the reality is we'll never really know. Is it possible that there was internal involvement of an agency like the CIA? Times change, and back in those days, the FBI was certainly more politically active. One would hope that would not be the case, but I think a reasonable person could at least entertain the argument. But I wish I had insight and I could give you breaking news, as everybody likes on the air, but I'm simply not that knowledgeable. I will say it was one of the more salient historical events in my life. If I was to name four, it would be among them. Along with 5 years later, the unfortunate assassinations of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and
President Kennedy's brother, Robert F. Kennedy.
Was that line?
The first assassination with JFK demonstrated that the nation could come together to express its unified disbelief and sadness. With Dr. King and Robert F. Kennedy, to me, as I was very, very young at the time, but it demonstrated how individual hatred could result in a profound and senseless loss of talent. And one can only, if you want to speculate on things rather than the CIA participation, speculate how different the world would be had any of those three survived.
Well, it's true, isn't it? I mean, that's a very, very good point, TJ. And it's true, I suppose, of how all our lives operate. The ifs and buts and the sliding doors. Had Kennedy survived that day, November 23, 1963, how does the world change? Does Vietnam end? Many say he wanted to end it. Some say that's not true. But had it ended? Had he lived 8 years? I mean, who follows him then? Probably not Johnson. everything changes, doesn't it? These single moments in history change things.
Everything changes.
Yeah. Let me ask you an ethical question. Not long before Kennedy's assassination, it was the Bay of Pigs that invaded, with American sanction, invaded Cuba, many times tried to kill Castro. They had approved the assassination of the Diem brothers in South Vietnam. They sanctioned killings in South America. They sanctioned killings in Africa. What is the ethical difference in other countries coming after Americans rather than Americans going after other countries?
I suppose it's what country you're located in. Americans don't like to think of themselves as being the hunted, but they are interestingly okay with being the hunters. And from an ethical standpoint, I think that's an area we could grow as a nation. I think you bring up an excellent point in that regard. And President Kennedy, by the way, was not a sure thing to get reelected. The reason he was in Dallas was because he needed the electoral votes from Texas to be able to secure a win in the next election. So that's the reason he was down there in 1963.
Yeah, it's a long time ago, isn't it? Now look ahead a little bit, if you will. Take the crystal ball, and what do you see as perhaps being, and you know, the future is a foreign land, what do you see as possibly some of the big changes in your country over the next 20 or 30 years?
Well, as we talked the other day, I still think technology is going to play a role. It's going to continue and accelerate relative to its evolution. I think in that regard, the two biggest changes in technology that I see coming is the advancement of artificial intelligence and machine learning, and then the potential emergence of quantum computing. The quantum computing in particular is a huge potential threat. And I talked about in 2012 when I was running that, you know, the next wars are going to be evolving into cyber warfare. The issue with quantum computing is that those types of computers could crack current encryption algorithms exponentially faster than even the best machines we have today. So when you have that, you're able to shut down or control infrastructure like the electrical grid, the water grid, water systems, transportation systems, planes, trains, self-driving cars, healthcare centers, banking networks. You could wake up one morning and all of your digital currency is gone because there really isn't any such thing as hard currency anymore. So it could have catastrophic consequences if our politicians, which are the other thing that I think has to change over the next 20 to 50 years, if our political system doesn't change and we don't start becoming more forward-thinking and understand what issues are threats to us, we're going to come upon quantum computing faster than we have a solution.
Mm.
And the other thing I would say, you know, we're looking at, to relate back to the political system, the repair of the demise of our political system in particular in the United States. Our Pledge of Allegiance ends with the words, with liberty and justice for all. And we fail to deliver on that promise and have for some time. We have different levels of liberty and justice for rich versus poor, politically elite versus average American. And you brought up the issue of the classified
documents.
You're going to see even a difference between the way the parties are perceived and the individuals are perceived, even though they committed the same faux pas.
Okay. Now, just before we go, it would be remiss because I know how much you love tennis, and you were a pro tennis player, the Australian Open starting. You'll be watching from over there?
I will definitely be watching. My heroes growing up were Rod Laver and Ken Rosewall, Roy Emerson, Fred Staley, John Newcomb, Tony Roche, guys like that. I had the pleasure of hitting with big hitters like Colin Dibley and John Alexander, clever players like Dick Creeley. So a lot of people today wouldn't even remember them, but the quality of tennis has gone up. I think they would all admit it as well. The quality and depth has gone up, and Australia particularly has benefited from radically improved air travel. Back when I was playing, only a small portion of the professional tour actually came to Australia. So it was a more isolated event. Today, it's global. As long as people are allowed in. I mean, Novak Djokovic may argue that point from last year, but he's going to be there this year, and I think he's a heavy favorite.
What about Nick Kyrgios? Do you like Nick? Do you give him a chance?
I love Nick Kyrgios. I think he's the most physically gifted player and has been for the last 10 years. But he's subject like Yvonne Goolagong used to say she'd have a walkabout. Every once in a while, she'd just disappear mentally from the court. a tremendous talent and a graceful player and wonderful to watch, but there were just days that she didn't hold it together. And Nick's kind of that same type of exciting player, but I would love to see him hold it together. He almost pulled it off at Wimbledon. It would be historic if he pulled it off at the Australian Open, and I'll certainly cheer for him.
It's been a great pleasure talking to you, TJ. Look forward to doing it again, and hopefully somewhere down the road.
Thank you, Greg.
Take care. TJ O'Hara, one-time presidential candidate as an independent in the United States. Always good to talk to him on Summer Afternoons at 4BC.